Hello, this is Ian with the Pantograph, dated Wednesday, October 18th, 2017. Let's begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined 100-year-old Lexington farmer has seen it all. Family, friends gather to mark milestone at Prairie Central Co-op. From Kevin Barlow, Lexington. Asked to make a speech on his 100th birthday, Lexington farmer Sam Harms quickly declined with a wry smile and a wave of the hand. Asked to tell stories, though, Harms didn't disappoint. How many people know how penicillin started? He asked a crowd of about 40 people Tuesday morning at the Prairie Central Co-op in Lexington. I was one of the first ones in the USA to be on it. I was in the hospital for 3 days and had 24 shots, one shot every 3 hours. It happened in the early 1940s, but Harms retold every detail in the story as if it happened yesterday, even describing how, after getting his shots one evening, his brother-in-law helped sneak him out of the Mennonite Hospital in Bloomington for 3 hours because there was farming to be done. "We got back and the darned hospital was locked," he said. He eventually found an open entrance at the rear of the building, planning to sneak back into his bed without being noticed. He knew it was nearly time for his next shot. "I got to the first floor and back to my room, and there was a woman in my bed," he said. "I went to the nurses' station and told them there was a woman in my bed. They asked me what I was doing there. I told them I was a patient. The lady said, 'Well, sir, this is the maternity ward.' I guess my bed was on the second floor." Friends and family gathered at the elevator Tuesday to watch Harms, who was born on October 17, 1917, drive a 7230 John Deere tractor, hauling two wagons filled with grain over the scales as part of his 100th birthday celebration. "I just don't understand it, really," Harms said of the people gathered to watch a 100-year-old man haul grain to an elevator. "It ain't that big of a deal, is it?" Harms began working on his family farm in the late 1920s when he was just a boy. He eventually inherited the farm and then turned over day-to-day management to his children in the 1980s. Still, he helps out when he can, and even has his driver's license. "He also has the energy," he says, "to work every day." "He is just an incredible man," said his daughter, Karen Young. "We were blessed to have great parents, and this day is special for all of us." Also on hand Tuesday was Sam's wife, Laverne, who celebrated her 100th birthday on March 1st. The two were married on January 2nd, 1940, and together they have 3 children, 9 grandchildren, and 16 great-grandchildren. "He's an unbelievably great guy," said Lori Harms, a granddaughter-in-law. "Sometimes, when I am around him, I will start talking louder, but he has perfect hearing and will say, 'Lori, you don't have to yell. I can hear you just fine.' He has responses for everything and is still very, very sharp. I just love talking to him. The entire family does." The celebration at the elevator included a green and yellow cake, the colors of his favorite tractor, a John Deere, baked in his honor. An inscription read, "You have seen it all." "Yeah, I think I have pretty much seen it all," he said. Rita Michael worked at the elevator for 26 years and saw Harms almost every day during harvest season. "Sam was first in line, and it didn't matter if we opened at 5, 6, or 7 a.m.," she said. "He was always first in line." Bill Killian worked at the elevator for 41 years. "I said when he pulled onto the scale, 'My God, Sam's made a lot of trips on that scale,' he said. It would be impossible to calculate how many trips he has made." But the thing about Sam is he is more than just a farmer. He is a great guy and a great friend to all who know him. Harms said he has no plans to settle down. Asked for his secret to life, he shrugs as if he doesn't know. "I just live it day to day, like anybody else," he said. "But I can say this, the good Lord has been taking care of us for over 100 years now, and I really appreciate that." We'll continue next with the article, Election Consolidation Feedback Sought. County Board Asked to Weigh In on Using Single Commission. From Derek Bay. Bloomington. McLean County Board could take steps towards consolidating local election agencies as soon as the end of the year. Chairman John McIntyre is seeking feedback from board members on the idea of moving from splitting election duties between Bloomington Election Commission and McLean County Clerk's Office to a single agency for all McLean County elections, he said on Tuesday. County Administrator Bill Wasson told the board last month that operating two election agencies, both paid for by the county, is confusing at best and inefficient at worst. And he asked the board to participate in dialogue and legislative discussions on a remedy. I want everybody to have the facts before we move ahead and see. I'm not sure, we don't know yet, said McIntyre, of what action the board might take. That's exactly why I made that comment at the end of our meeting to ask them to give me input. Wasson said the fact-finding process could end before 2018 to allow staff to include information on the issue in the county's legislative agenda, which lays out how local officials want state lawmakers to help them through the legislation. His request came during a presentation on the county's 2018 budget, which includes a $1 million budget deficit that threatens jobs. The county is offering buyouts to experienced employees, is under a soft hiring freeze, and has cut pay raises. 9 employees have volunteered for buyouts so far. Regardless, it is not going to have an impact on the 2018 budget, Wasson said, of consolidating elections. Board action would break a long stalemate between the county, which prefers to absorb election duties into the clerk's office, and League of Women Voters McLean County, which has pushed for a countywide commission for years. Officials have identified 2 possible solutions. 1,000 Bloomington voters could petition for a referendum of city voters to eliminate the BEC, or the county could push for a legislative change to allow a countywide referendum on establishing a new commission covering all McLean County elections. Board member Josh Barnett tweeted Monday, "This deserves further conversation and debate. Consolidation is a good thing, but let's explore all options and get it right." Nikita Richards, a Democrat running for county clerk in 2018, said Sunday she supports a countywide election commission. Kathy Michael, the Republican clerk seeking re-election, said last week, "Moving the Bloomington Election Commission duties into the county clerk's office makes good fiscal sense." Currently, the BEC conducts elections in Bloomington, and the clerk's office conducts elections in the rest of the county, including Normal. Peoria and Springfield have both consolidated to a single election agency. We'll now continue with the article, "Clothing Retailer May Fill BN Site." Ross Store Listed for Former Dick's Space, from Derek Bay, Normal. A low-price clothing retailer could be coming to the former Dick's Sporting Goods store in Normal. Ross Dress for Less, an outlet store with locations throughout Illinois, including Champaign and Peoria, is named as the tenant coming to that space in a document provided by the town of Normal. The document is a schedule of project expenses for owner Phillips Edison and Company to improve 2 connected shopping centers that include Fresh Market and Petco. It lists Ross Dress for Less as a tenant to receive $1 million in improvements. That's the same amount Phillips Edison officials said that the company will spend on the former Dick's space, and there's currently no Ross Dress for Less there, or anywhere else in Bloomington Normal. Officials avoided naming the retailer while discussing it Monday. Phillips Edison declined Tuesday to confirm or deny it's Ross Dress for Less, and the retailer did not respond to a request for comment. The chain's website, rossstores.com, refers to Ross Dress for Less as the nation's largest off-price retail chain. "We work directly with manufacturers to negotiate the best deals. We love new buys. We keep it simple so we can get the great buys into our stores quickly, which means every day," according to the site. "We believe in no frills, no window displays, mannequins, fancy fixtures, or decorations in our stores, so we can pass more savings on to our customers." The eventual tenant is set to open next fall, or the following spring, said Scott Adair, Vice President of Community Partnerships for Phillips Edison, on Tuesday. This, in part, will depend on how quickly the permitting and plan review process can be concluded, he said. The Normal County City Council approved Monday night an $800,000 sales tax rebate for Phillips Edison, which plans to spend a total of $4 million on improvements. That deal is expected to bring at least three new businesses to the center. Two of those will be where Office Depot and Shoe Carnival are now. Those businesses will stay open, but downsize their spaces. We are actively engaged in discussions with numerous national credit retailers for the site. We have a multitude of relationships with retailers and are actively pursuing all opportunities, Adair said, of what type of businesses will use those spaces. When they will be open is yet to be determined. The company will receive 0.5% of sales from the new retailers through the sales tax for 10 years, estimated at $800,000. The town is expected to receive $4.6 million in new sales tax revenue from the deal. The company also plans to install two pad sites, smaller retail spaces, in the center's parking lots. We are actively marketing two pad sites. No firm proposals yet, but, as indicated above, we are reaching out to our retail contacts about these opportunities, said Adair. If anyone in the community is interested in one of the pad sites, they may contact Greg Klo, Vice President of Redevelopment. The former Dick's has been empty for more than a year since the company moved its local store to Empire Crossing in Bloomington. The city agreed to pay Empire Crossing owner BT Bloomington LLC up to $4 million in tax increment financing and sales tax revenues to do a $10 million renovation of the shopping center at Empire State Street and Vendors Parkway. We will continue next on page A3, the local section, with the article "Members Picked for City Board" from Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Mayor Tari Renner has nominated the first members of Bloomington's new civilian board to review public complaints against the police. The City Council will be asked Monday night to approve the appointment of the Reverend William Bennett, Robert Bosquez, Serena Fish, Jan Lancaster, Sally Rudolph, Arthur Taylor, and Jeffrey Woodward to the 7-member Public Safety and Community Relations Board. I think they are very representative of the community, said Renner. We've got people of color, we've got males and females, people who have long records of accomplishment in our city. Bennett is pastor of the City of Refuge, a church on the west edge of downtown. Bosquez is the Community Engagement Coordinator for the West Bloomington Revitalization Project. Fish is a retired and a member of the Miller Park Neighborhood Group. Lancaster is a self-described advocate for equality and owner of the downtown bar, The Bistro, a gathering place for the local LGBT community. Rudolph is a retired pharmacist, a member of the League of Women Voters, McLean County, and former McLean County board member. Taylor is active in Not in Our Town, and was involved in diversity training at State Farm before retiring. Woodward is Director of Marketing and Community Relations for the McLean County Museum of History. I am very confident that the board is going to be able to move forward and help improve our police and neighborhood relationships, Renner added. The mayor's appointments to the board must be approved by a supermajority of the council, 6 out of the 9 aldermen. As mayor, Renner could have made selections himself, but said he wanted the aldermen to have more input since this is a new board. He asked each alderman to look at the applications and submit his or her top 3 choices. This is the list, out of 66 applicants who were the top vote-getters by the city council, and I did promise the city council that those would be the names I would submit, Renner said, adding, the council made a very wise choice overall. In July, the council approved creating the board, which was requested by an alliance of community organizations, including Not in Our Town, American Civil Liberties Union of Central Illinois, NAACP, YWCA of McLean County, and Black Lives Matter, Bloomington Normal. Black Lives Matter noted in a statement Tuesday that none of the group's 40 proposed members was nominated, but we recognize and celebrate the leadership of the 7 current nominees and congratulate them on their opportunity to answer our community's call for greater civilian power over the police. The 7-member board will play an advisory role only. In looking at public complaints about police, the board will be empowered only to review whether police department protocols were followed properly in the department's own investigation of each complaint. All applications will be kept on file for 24 months in case a vacancy should arise, said Bloomington Communication Manager Nora Dukowitz. We'll go next to the article, A Silent Night for the Sounds of Christmas. State Farm no longer able to provide venue for free holiday events. From Dan Kraft, Bloomington. One of the most popular and long-running holiday traditions in the Twin Cities has come to an end after 35 years. The Sounds of Christmas concerts in the atrium at State Farm are being discontinued due to an ongoing remodeling project in the space. We have been making numerous improvements to our Bloomington campus, especially our 45-year-old corporate headquarters, State Farm spokeswoman Missy Dundov said in a statement. A major project is the renovation of our atrium, she added. This will take several months to complete, and we will not be able to host the Sounds of Christmas. We have enjoyed hosting the Sounds of Christmas in years past. State Farm provided the venue, while the music shop in Normal organized the performance end of the concerts, recruiting the musicians and singers, including the 100-plus orchestra members and other guest choirs and singers. It's painful. It is really painful, said the music shop's Joy Hippenstein Steele, of the decision to end the popular event. The free tickets to the two concerts, distributed through a lottery system, were routinely claimed in a matter of hours, she noted. Ultimately, State Farm left the decision up to us after saying they would no longer move forward as a sponsor, she said. We struggled to get over it. In making the decision to end the concert for good, we basically went back to the roots of the program and the idea that the show was a gift to the community and nobody would have to pay for tickets, said Hippensteel. It was an equal opportunity that anyone could participate in as long as they were fortunate to write in and get their tickets. Without that free aspect, musicians donated their services. She said the event could not go forward. Without a place to hold it at no expense, we couldn't figure a way to do it without charging for tickets, said Hippensteel. The concept of the concert came from the late Dick Benson of Music, Music, Piano Store, who, in a 1989 Pantograph interview, recalled being inspired by The Sounds of America, a 1976 bicentennial-themed show at Illinois State University. It was all local talent, and I was amazed at just how much of it there is around here. I wanted to figure out a way to do it all again, he said. It took almost another 5 years, but he made it happen. With the aid of then WJBC morning man Don Munson, who accompanied him to a meeting with the then State Farm president, Edward B. Rust Sr. After hearing the idea, Rust lit his pipe, sat back and grinned, and said, I love it. That was summer of 1982. By December 23rd of that year, Benson's dream was a reality. We'll go next to the article, Faith in Action Puts Hold on New Clients. Organization seeks volunteers to help transport seniors. From Paul Sweech, Normal. An organization that works to keep older adults independent has put a temporary hold on new applicants, for the second time this year, until it can attract more volunteers. Faith in Action continues to get new volunteers, but is attracting even more people needing help, Director Doretta Herr said this week. The organization has 433 volunteers, compared with 422 when Faith in Action lifted its previous ban in April. But at that time, the volunteers were helping 586 care receivers. Faith in Action is actively serving 635 care receivers, Herr said this week when discussing the temporary ban. I am unsure how long we will continue to place potential care receivers on hold, Herr said. We are now averaging over 1,000 services a month. Faith in Action volunteers drive older adults to medical appointments, provide grocery shopping assistance, do friendly visits, and perform seasonal maintenance in Bloomington Normal, Hayward, Hudson, and Towanda. Faith in Action receives no state or federal money, instead relying on donations, especially from church congregations. Herr could not say whether the increase in seniors needing assistance could be attributed directly to WYCA McLean County's closing Medivan services and Connect Transit route changes. But Herr said, because of local changes in transportation options, Faith in Action has become a critical piece in the framework of available McLean County senior services. The number of seniors we serve is growing quickly, and volunteers are needed to take up care receivers to medical appointments. Anyone interested in getting more information about becoming a trained volunteer may call 309-827-7780 or email office@bnfia.org. Volunteers must first complete a 90-minute orientation. We'll continue next with the article, HCC Center Touts Collaboration. Pontiac Site Stresses Continuing Education. From Lenore Sabota. Pontiac. Heartland Community College's Pontiac Center is working on more collaboration, particularly in the area of continuing education, trustees were told Tuesday night at a meeting there. In addition to collaboration with employers and school districts, priorities for the continuing education program include providing professional learning and ensuring a good return on the investments in the program, said Clem Klingbeil, a program coordinator in continuing education. Klingbeil said the continuing education program is concentrating on dental assistant, truck driving, Microsoft Office specialist, and welding fields. The dental assistant program should be ready to begin this spring, she said. The workforce development piece is an important piece here at the Pontiac Center, she said. In the area of courses offered for college credit, unduplicated headcount and average class sizes have remained relatively stable at the Pontiac Center, according to a report to the board. The unprecedented headcount this fall is 147, which is down about 10% from fall 2016, but higher than the 140 and 135 in fall of 2015 and 2014, respectively. The average class size for fall and spring classes has ranged from 14 to 17 from fall 2013 this fall. Credit hours taken in the 2016 and 17 school year rebounded from 1,985 in the 2015-16 school year to 2,050. In other business, the board approved a tax rebate of $40,282 to State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company. That is part of a settlement agreement reached in 2010 and amended in 2015. The settlement, which involves 10 taxing bodies, was reached to avoid a challenge to the assessment of a State Farm property in the district. Doug Minter, Vice President for Business Services, said the agreement avoids the risk of a challenge by State Farm to its property assessment, which could result in the loss of even more money. Board member Becky Ropp said she didn't mind this particular agreement because it creates a certainty for State Farm and a certainty for us. However, the State Farm agreement sparked some conversation about the unrelated issue of providing tax abatements as incentives to attract economic development. Rob said she is getting less comfortable with those kinds of abatements without assurances of specific job gains or other measurable benefits. Next, we'll continue with the article, Bloomington Library Seeks Tax Levy Hike, from Maria Nagel. Bloomington. For a second year in a row, Bloomington Public Library will seek a tax levy increase, this time to help fund a future expansion or $2 million in needed repairs if it stays at the current site. The library has proposed a balanced $5.59 million budget for fiscal year 2019, which will begin on May 1st. It calls for a 2.9% increase, or $158,643, from this year's budget of about $5.43 million. We really looked at the operating budget and tried to cut where we could, said Library Director Gene Hamilton. But then we really tried to look at the future, too. The proposed budget, which the library board unanimously approved on Tuesday night, also calls for a tax levy hike of about 3%, or $140,493, from $4.68 million levied in 2017 to $4.8 million to be levied in 2018. Just as we find it's imperative to prepare for the future by saving for future repairs and replacements as a homeowner, it's important that the library does the same thing, said Hamilton. But if the community decides it does want an expansion, this money will help build the foundation for that. The council will consider its November 13th meeting whether or not to set the library's tax levy, as proposed by the library's trustees. If the council votes against it, the budget will come back to the library board to redo. If approved, the $140,493 in additional revenue would be added to the library's separate capital fund balance of about $2.43 million to be used as a down payment for the library's expansion. While the Downtown Task Force has been discussing a catalyst project involving building a new library at the Market Street parking deck site, the library board hired the Farnsworth Group in 2015 to complete the planning phase and produce a site plan using its current location of 205 East Olive Street. We can use this money for architectural, engineering, and those type of things to find out what it would truly cost to expand, said Library Board President Alex Cardona. Or, if nothing happens, we can look at what we need to do specifically to stay in this building. The $2 million in necessary repairs over the next 5 years at the current facility include replacing the roof, return air ducts, air handler, carpeting, broken and worn furniture, garage driveway, parking lot curb, retaining wall, and lighting, said Hamilton. Compared to the repair list, $140,000 is a drop in the bucket, said Library Trustee Susan Moore. If a new library is not wanted, I think we have a lot of people who can look at the hard data that we have and agree that people are using the library, people appreciate the library. So just to maintain our current building and our current level of service, we need that amount, at the very least, added Moore. The estimated tax rate would be $0.26055 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation. The library's share of the tax bill for the owner of a $165,000 home is expected to increase $4.17 from $139.13 payable this year to $143.30 payable in 2018. Even with the proposed increase, Bloomington's library's tax remains much lower than those of other libraries in the region, said Hamilton. In comparison, the library tax rates are about 45 cents per $100 EAV for normal, 56 cents per $100 EAV for Urbana, 42 cents per $100 EAV for Champaign, and 43 cents per $100 EAV for Peoria, Hamilton said. We will take a short break now and return with the second half of the Pantograph, dated October 18th, 2017. Please stay tuned.